Welcome to the Lantern Bearers, preserving culture when the lights go out. I'm Walker.
And I'm Peter.
And in today's episode, we're going to be talking about how to control what enters your home in the information age and why you should care.
Right. So there's kind of a rough outline I have for how we're going to break this down. So I think we're going to start by talking about the different channels of access for information into your home.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll break that into two sections. The means of access kind of from the 1940s on, and then the means of access more recently when this has really taken off.
Because, okay, I mean, yeah, like the way humans digital
have,
age.
Exactly, yeah. Humans have communicated radically differently in the last 70 years.
Mm-hmm.
But even within the last 20 years, that's changed a lot. So we'll talk about that. Then we'll talk about why that matters. Specifically the influence of culture on individuals.
Mass culture,
marketing, that kind of thing, music, literature, film,
mm-hmm.
how all of those can have an effect on you and effect on your family. And then once we've discussed all of those things, we'll give some options for ways to opt out.
Okay.
How you can limit access of information to your home, kind of ranging from mild to, you know, more extreme forms of change. So,
okay.
And we just bought a dog. So if you hear the
whining in the background. She's a good dog.
She's a good dog. We buy a lot of animals, so frequently on these you'll probably hear them.
Various, yeah, squawks pigs, and grunts dogs. In the background.
And then sometimes it's just Walker.
And sometimes it's me. Sometimes it's a child, just squints, one of your kids.
Grunts and squawks in the background. So let's jump right into the channels of access. So 1940s to present, kind of the main ones in the mid-20th century that were new on a mass scale,
mm-hmm.
radio, TV, different kinds of print media, and increasingly schools. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, more public schools, more education taking place on a larger scale, less on a localized scale, more on a state
and kind of more scale. Kind of more uniform, right?
Exactly.
Like the public programs and
all of that. Yeah, I mean, you started to see public schools in the United States pretty early on in their history.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't the idea of a public school originally a communist invention?
It is. It's in the Communist Manifesto.
And we have that. We have that here now. Okay.
Indeed.
Interesting.
Yeah. No, a lot of the ideas in public school systems are taken from communism.
Okay.
And then
it kind of transitions when we get into the digital age, right? We get even more of these.
So even more of these. We still have those old forms. We still have radio. We still have TV. We still kind of have print media. It's in a new format.
Mm-hmm.
But we still have that very much affecting us. We still have education systems, obviously. But starting from about 1995 on, that was the year that I think the internet was commercialized. Essentially, it was licensed for commercial use.
Okay.
So from 1995 on, you start to see the internet in homes. So people buying and using personal computers for the first time in their own home.
Right.
You also start to see cell phone use. You know, at that point, obviously, it's flip phones.
Mm-hmm,
but as you
mm-hmm.
transition into the early 2000s and beyond, you start to use BlackBerry smartphones, that kind of thing.
That just reminds me, we should totally do a podcast on the origin of the internet.
Oh, that'd be really interesting.
I don't know that much about it.
I don't know
it,
that anybody knows that much about it.
That it's kind of interesting stuff, but sorry.
Maybe we can get Al Gore on.
No doubt.
And then,
no doubt.
Once you have those means of communication, you kind of have those just in a, you know, hyper-internet way. So you have social media, you have all kinds of ways where information about you is being used and information is being presented to you in a way that's almost subconscious because these things have become so prevalent.
Well, they're constant, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you
especially
have,
with
like,
this smartphone, right?
Targeted marketing, you know, based on internet usage, cookies, tracking, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. You have proximity marketing, which we can talk a little bit more in depth about if that comes up. But you have all of this stuff where information is just being constantly, pushed on individuals.
Yeah.
If you use these things, and everyone uses these now in Western, you know, modern culture.
Yeah, a few
so,
statistics on that. So,
go ahead, yeah.
According to a Pew survey from January of this year, 2018, they kind of tracked the growing influence of the internet over the past 18 years. Okay. And so in 2000, only about 52% of Americans used the internet.
Yeah.
Which
that's surprising.
Actually is less than I would have thought.
But I mean, if you think about 1995 to 2000, that's only about 5
years.
Yeah,
it's only been out 5 years at that point.
95 is when you started to see personal computers. I remember my family, I don't think we got one until like 98. You know,
right about the average.
So, yeah, go ahead.
And then in 2005, that number increased to 68%.
Okay.
In 2010, it was 76%. Which is actually still less than I would have thought in 2010.
Yep.
Then 85% in 2015, and then now it's at about 89%.
Okay, which makes sense and that, if you account for rural areas, you know.
Right, and that 11% who does not use the internet tends to be older individuals, lower income. Sometimes they just don't have a computer. They just don't care. It's largely the 65 and over.
Okay, that makes sense. And actually, the reason that percentage is so high, you know, it's a whole 10%, a whole 11%, is probably just because our population is aging out.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
There's and less it's young people than there are older people, honestly. So
only like 2% of, I can't remember if it was 18 to 30 or somewhere in the right. young...
In the younger demographic. The younger I'm demographic. Assuming it's much lower.
Only about 2% does not use the internet. And then if we look at the prevalence of like cell phone usage and how strongly people are drawn to cell phones or smartphones. So in an interview on CBS Canada with Adam Alter, who is the author of Irresistible, The Rise of Addictive Technology and the Business of Keeping Us Hooked, 75% of people say that they can reach their phone 24 hours per day without moving their feet, which means... Yeah, so 24 hours a day, it's within arm's reach for
75%. 75% of people.
Correct.
That's a lot of people.
So it's, you know, it's as closely attached to most people as, like, a wristwatch. Well, sometimes it is a wristwatch with smartwatches.
That's true, yeah.
And then the average person spends 3 hours and 42 minutes looking at their phone per day.
Oh, my gosh.
And that number is rising. Just their phone. Just their phone. If you consider all media, so computer, TV, radio, and stuff like that. So some of it's auditory, but a lot of it is still screens.
Yeah.
Then that rises to about 10 hours per day on average for Americans.
Think about adult Americans. Isn't that counting work, I suppose?
Yeah, I'm sure that counts work.
Yeah, so I mean, that makes sense.
Unless people are just not doing their jobs at all. You know, you couldn't do 10 hours of...
Well,
stuff with that.
Well, I mean, you can go do 8 hours of work and then.
If
like,
you didn't sleep, I suppose, or something.
How many hours are there in a day? 24? Still 24.
It's still 24. They haven't changed that yet.
Yeah, you could come close to that even if you worked.
Even, yeah, not counting work. I believe it's counting work, I guess. Yeah. I'm not sure. So, yeah, that's according to a Nielsen Company audience report covered by CNN. And so, in a lot of ways, these technologies are like legitimately scientifically addicting. They give a, I mean, and they're designed to be that way. A lot of them, especially social media, they give like a dopamine hit when you get, you know, a new message or a new like or something. There's something very addicting about the unpredictability of it. So if you always know that you're going to get rewarded, you get bored with something.
Right.
Or you're going to get that little dopamine hit. But if you don't know, then it makes it, for some reason, it's much more addictive. Like, it's exciting because you just keep wanting to do it over and over again to see. It's like gambling.
Yeah.
You keep doing it to see if you're going to get it. So that's why you check your email over and over and over.
Yeah, or check, or update Facebook. Update your Facebook.
Because you never know if you're going to get that little message.
Has anyone commented on my post? Or
and then you, when like you do, me. You get the the hit. So,
Wow, that's interesting.
Interesting stuff.
That transitions well into kind of our next section, talking about being marketed to. I think that is a big driving force behind a lot of the information that is being presented to people on a daily basis.
Sure, yeah.
I think one of the realities people don't always realize is that you are for sale in the modern information age. If you are participating in social media, in widespread use of the internet, in personal devices like smartphones, where you're accessing them all the time like this, where, you know, 75% of people, it's within reach 24 hours a day, that's something people can monetize. And so a lot of the things driving that development, you know, it's for the purpose of gaining information about you, for the purpose of advertising.
If the service or whatever is free, then you are the product.
Exactly. Like, basically. You know, there's the old saying, if you can't see what's for sale, it's probably you.
It's probably you.
You know, and it always astounds me when there's a hearing before the Senate, you know, Facebook's called out before a congressional committee, mm-hmm. and it's like, how could you do this, Facebook? And it's like, what did you think they were doing? Do you think that...
they're just,
you
know,
they just think Zuckerberg's just doing this out of the kindness of his heart.
Right.
It's like, no, of course not. All of the information people put on Facebook is being used in some way. So, you know, a couple interesting things to think about here. Marketers are trying to reach children at an earlier and earlier age, now that this has become widespread. You know, most kids can recognize basic movements and commands on an iPad or a smartphone.
Yeah, yeah.
By the time they reach age one,
you know? Oh, but
yeah,
one,
no, like they're raised in front of those now, and there's all kinds of apps marketed at that. But like,
sure.
If you're if you're a company that has a product, if you can get a kid hooked on your product when they're 6 months old,
mm.
you potentially have 75-80 years of that person purchasing your product.
Right,
and the
yeah.
more people you hook, like, that's a
lot of the brand loyalty.
Time. So a lot of companies honestly aim for brand loyalty by 6 months.
That's just, yeah, that's
so
crazy.
Like a company like Disney, they'll market to parents by putting, you know, a cute character on mm-hmm, a box of diapers. Mm-hmm, like, oh, Mickey mm-hmm. Mouse is on my kid's diapers. Isn't that cute? You know, it's nothing cute than having Goofy on your kid's butt. You know, it's like, this is nice. And the kids start to see that, and they can recognize that at a very early age.
That explains, like, the enormous prevalence of, like, John Deere tractor toys, you know?
Absolutely,
stuff like that.
Yeah, John Deere. It's like, oh,
everywhere.
You know,
and then when those, you know, little farm kids grow up and they
yeah,
have their own farm,
yeah.
and they're going to buy John Deere, I suppose
yeah.
is the idea.
Or another big thing would be food. You know, obviously, people know that Fruit Loops are bad for you, and yet parents still buy their children Fruit Loops. How? Well, you have to market pretty aggressively to sell people Fruit Loops
to sell Fruit Loops.
Everybody knows at this point that sugar is really bad,
yeah.
and yet we still are getting fatter and more obese
yeah.
as days go on.
There's a whole other podcast.
Because
yeah.
people are being bombarded with this information, you know, mm-hmm. and they're bombarding it at children at a young age, they're bombarding parents. So all of this is being, you know, people are trying to sell you something, which
basically,
kind of raises the question. Go ahead,
being
yeah.
manipulated.
Right.
Yeah.
You're, you know... If you go out in the world, unless you're like a, you know, if you're living off-grid, in which case you're not even listening, in a cabin in the woods.
Yeah,
so I can say whatever I want about those people. They're not listening. If you're living in a cabin in the woods, you know, you're not affected by this so much. I don't think, like, an elk is advertising, like, hey, eat me. You know, I'm better than the other elk. But if you're in, you know, if you're existing in any way in the modern world, this is out there. So it's all the time.
We all deal with it.
No one can really argue with this. I mean, you can if you want, but this is a thing, it's here.
Just look up, if you don't, yeah, I mean, you can look up, like, data brokers, which
yeah,
are
exactly.
companies that exist solely for gathering
yep.
information
yep,
to
yep,
market
yep, yep.
to you. And,
yeah.
And, yeah.
So, it's there, which kind of raises the question,
who
beyond,
cares?
Well, who cares, but beyond just making money, what kind of message are these marketers, advertisers pushing to sell their product?
Okay.
A good example I'm thinking of to kind of transition to what I want to talk about next, which is kind of more the cultural aspect
yeah.
of this, is clothing advertisements.
Okay.
So, if you think of a company like Abercrombie and Fitch, which is like a high-end children's kind of for, you know, teens.
Yeah.
High-end designer clothes for teens, you know. They're really expensive. All the cool kids at school have them, whether you sell them, if it's still a thing, whatever. You know?
I don't know.
That was a thing at one point. If it's not anymore, it's still an example. They're selling an image and a lifestyle.
Mm.
I listened to an interview with someone in marketing, and they were talking about a quote from the president of Abercrombie & Fitch, where he was saying, paraphrasing, something along the lines of, we don't want ugly kids buying our product. I'm not kidding. Because we want people to see the hot kids in school wearing our clothing.
Yeah. The whole...
It's the whole thing.
The whole package.
And this same interview, this marketer was showing slides of actual Abercrombie & Fitch advertisements, and it's mostly just, like, semi-nude teens, you know? So, like...
Yeah.
Guy in trunks and no shirt and girl in a bikini. And it's like, and, you know, contrary to what you main thing from these, Abercrombie & Fitch does actually sell clothing, not, you know, things that cover teens, you
not
know,
just
not just nude teens, you know. So that, you know, this is like very, very much a lifestyle. They're selling an image. They're selling a lifestyle. They have a specific type of person they want. You know, it's like, yeah, if you're a five or lower, we don't want you wearing our stuff. You know?
Right.
So all of this marketing is not only just making money, it's also pushing a new lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
a new culture, so to speak, you know.
Okay, yeah.
Try pitching Abercrombie & Fitch in 1940 with a bunch of half-nude teens and see how that goes over, you know. And obviously, so something has changed between now and then, like, what's changed?
Yeah.
So, that kind of leads us to a larger, you know, question of what kind of culture is all of this information pushing on your family?
Sure.
A lot of it's subconscious, you know, through advertising, through marketing, blah, 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 blah.
See, because, the truth is that the average household or head of household has very little control over what is coming in, right? Because you've got...
Yeah.
If you have a TV and if you have the internet, they're just constantly streaming in a lot of different types of programs, a lot of different types of websites, whatever. It's a vast... you know, array of stuff that you really don't, most people don't have the time to curate.
Exactly. That much. Yeah. And, you know, commercials on TV,
mm-hmm.
advertisements online.
You know,
you don't have any way to, and if you, like, for example, if you have children in school and they have smartphones, it's very hard to curate their interaction with other children on those devices on social media, you know?
Let alone their internet
usage. If they have social media accounts, how are you supposed to keep track of all that? It's just, you know... And the other problem is that for kids born 1995 and later, they have a much more intuitive grasp of all of this stuff than their parents.
Yeah. So yeah.
You may think you have them, you know, pretty well pinned down, like, oh, I know what little Johnny's doing online, but little Johnny's been swimming in the internet since he was, you know...
Since he could crawl.
So you probably don't know what he's doing online.
Right,
So, there's been a shift in, you know, I think people can generally agree there's been a shift in the kinds of things that are marketed.
Sure.
Since this new style of communication first kind of became widespread in the 1940s,
mm-hmm.
and the culture that's being marketed.
Yeah, example that occurred to me. There's very much a certain kind of lifestyle that seems to be promoted. People have an idea of what kind of life is cool and makes you happy, and that's what's associated with the product. So,
yep.
I mean, car ads are notoriously... Cars. You know, it's like the super hot sort of urban... lifestyle, and they're super rich, and it's like, this will be you if you buy this car.
Or Abercrombie & Fitch, or Cheerios, or whatever it is.
And it isn't obviously true that you'll be that person if you buy the car, but maybe more importantly, it disposes you to view that as what you should be, right?
Yes.
You know, this is desirable. Look, it's, you know, we're trying to sell to you.
You buy this car, you'll be surrounded by beautiful people. And
you'll be rich and have wealth and urban. And that is a good thing. It's all presented as the correct lifestyle.
Yeah. I think that, you know, across the board, the lifestyle being pushed on people is highly individualist. Like, highly individualist.
Yeah.
Like an unprecedented level of individualism.
Mm-hmm. Personal freedom.
Personal freedom. Your desires, wants should be your compass.
Mm-hmm.
You want a really nice sports car, you should have one.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, being really, really wealthy is like always sort of presented as the best thing.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
the more money you can make and have, you know, the better.
Absolutely. So a second point along that would be, you know, materialism, no sense of delayed gratification.
Yeah, yeah. Everything if you want it, you should get it now.
Right now. No real sense of, you know, putting your needs aside for someone else's.
Yeah.
Basically just pushing a lifestyle where your good is the highest good, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and this basically, it all ties back to the point we made in our last episode, which is that these different cultural forces right. do shape people to a certain yeah. extent. It shapes yep. what you, maybe even subconsciously, but it shapes your perceptions of what is desirable, what is cool, what is fashionable, what you should be.
Yeah, and I think that act. I think that holds true even in media where there's not an obvious product they're selling other than the media itself. So, for example, music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, music isn't necessarily trying to sell anything else, although oftentimes I think that's kind of yeah, a subliminal message. But if you turn on the radio and you listen to any like top 40 pop song station,
yeah,
the type of music they're playing is not exactly endorsing self-sacrifice, to say the least.
Yeah, it's not usually about giving to other people. It's about right. it's about taking. I mean, you know, the things that they're usually praising, you know, drugs, sex, and money. I mean, those would be alcohol. Those are right up there, right? Partying. Right. Those are like, that's what's cool, right? Yep. And so you get this cool beat and this smooth
that's an interesting guitar, point.
And it seems like this within must music, be cool, good stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's an interesting point within music. You said you mentioned beat.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, if you look at the way music has developed from 1940 on,
mm-hmm.
You know, in the 1920s, 30s, you had kind of jazz and then rhythm and blues big and rock band, and roll, yeah. big band, blah, 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 up to the present point. You've shifted farther and farther away from melody and harmony and more towards rhythm. So most music now is based almost exclusively on the rhythm.
Yeah, yeah.
There's less instrumentation. There's less actual instruments. If you turn on the radio, a lot of it is just synthesizers and electronic beat. And it's yeah. mostly just beat-based.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you look at kind of history of the philosophy of music, most ancient medieval philosophers would break music down into three components: melody, harmony, rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
Melody appeals to the intellect, harmony to the emotions, and rhythm to the passions. And so most music now is designed to just appeal to your passions.
Which would be like your animal kind of instincts,
animal
right?
kind of instincts, more yeah. of so, I mean, there are legitimate instincts. Uses for that, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes music was used in the past to like fire you up if you had to go defend the homeland.
Go into battle,
like
yeah.
Like, we gotta go get these guys out of here.
And then you want a little bit of
fire up the bagpipes. Your instincts. You know, get your blood yeah. pumping there, guy.
Yeah.
But I don't think that is exactly what, you know,
I don't know. Your 10-year-old
needs.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the type of animal instinct they're appealing to either.
But yeah, it's usually not some kind of patriotic.
No. Yeah, they're inspiring yeah, patriotism in our children.
Yeah. Protect and serve.
Right.
Okay. So, and then it, you know, film, of course, would be another big category.
Film is tricky. I think we talked about this briefly last week. Anything yeah. visual is hard to ignore.
Yeah, I mean, try sitting in a sports bar with 12 TVs and try ignoring all the
TVs. Doesn't
matter
what's on any of the TVs. They could just be playing, like, a flashing light. And you wouldn't be able to look away. It's like, man, I can't stop looking at that flashing light.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
But they're not exactly just playing a flashing light, you know?
Yeah, right.
Well, in a sports bar, it's sports, but...
And other things.
And
yeah.
other things.
Especially the commercials.
Yeah.
Selling more products.
With lots of skin.
Yeah, right. Shaping your perception of what is cool desirable.
Desirable, yeah.
And what is a good way yep. to act.
Yep. All of the means of communication have been shaped by the way we now communicate since these became widespread, I would argue. Everything yeah. has become much more instantaneous, much less about delayed gratification.
Mm-hmm.
If you want it, you should have it now. I think, you know, I was reading a little bit the other day on your generation, the I generation.
Barely. I'm almost a millennial.
Yeah. When were you born?
98.
Oh, you're in there. 95 and on.
Oh, really? Is that millennial?
Yeah. It's I generation.
I generation.
95, 96 is the cutoff for millennials.
Oh, okay.
But most people your age have not read a book on their own in the last year. You know, something like that.
Yeah.
Most people now have a hard time sitting through like an hour
and
of a Netflix
interesting
show.
Thing about the book reading, which I just found today actually, was there was a study published in the Scientific American, so you know, reputable study.
Yeah.
That children, but just people in general who read literature books, but especially like the upper echelon, like not just genre fiction, but especially
yeah.
the best literature,
yeah.
Have a greater capacity for empathy. They're more able to understand other people's thoughts and feelings, and you know, maybe commiserate with those feelings. So, interesting tidbit. But
you're telling me that they're not getting that from Lady Gaga?
Not so much. Yeah, not so much from what's the like Jewel game?
Oh, Candy Crush.
Yeah, stuff like
people
that.
Do
I don't
that's
know.
Thing.
It's probably
know.
Not.
It's probably not, yeah. We say all these things, and it's like, is that what the kids are doing? I don't know.
Yeah, I should know better. But.
Yeah. So, things are bad. There's all kinds of things out there. Information is being presented to you. You are for sale. Your family is for sale.
And then, on top of that, one thing I want to add. So there can be a psychological effect from this stuff as well, like let alone maybe the way it's shaping your attitudes or your beliefs, but also the way it shapes your, like literally shapes your brain.
Like shapes your brain, interesting.
There's a book called The Shallows by, it's Nicholas Carr.
That's right.
Which is kind of all about that, but just as one brief example, there was a writer named Paul Miller who went off the internet for a year and kind of explained some of it, his experiences and how it changed, and some things he noticed right away was that his concentration got way better. It used to be really difficult for him to read like 10 pages straight, you know. After a little while of being off the internet, he could read like 100 or 200 pages much more easily for longer periods of time. His ability to socialize improved. He was able to concentrate more on the people he was with. He had more real life interactions. He was more, you know, focused on the people he was with and actually seeing them face to face. He lost weight without really trying.
Interesting.
He wrote a lot more than usual, to the point where his boss was complaining about how much material he was submitting. It was like too many essays. But then things changed later on. He began to sort of lose motivation to do anything with his life, and so he just ended up like playing video games and listening to audiobooks. And became more and more disconnected from people. Not that you know, would necessarily be the result of going off the internet. And you can see how, again, the technology in the form of video games sort of filled that void and maybe erased some of his
gains. So he was not using internet, but he was using video games.
Right,
that kind of thing. Sure.
Right. But it was an interesting case study. You can read more about that at The Verge.
The Verge. I think I've seen it.
And he did a TED Talk, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I've seen that article.
Right.
Interesting stuff.
So, and there's a lot more research on that subject too. But the point just being that it this technology use does have a neurological effect. You know, with concentration. For
example, I am frankly not surprised.
Such, you know, things like that.
Well, all of those being the case, let's talk about some ways to limit that. What are some ways you can kind of opt out of this system that has been built up?
Right.
You know, I think it's interesting, one last note on that. It's interesting that most people never really seem to question that too much. They always kind of, you know, young people, even older people who have not lived with the internet but use it now, no one really seems to question whether or not it's a good idea to do that. When you think about it, these forms of mass communication have really only been around for 70 years, and in the case of the internet, have only been around for about 20 years on a mass scale, and it's like, we're just assuming this is fine.
It's all going to be fine.
It's all going to be fine.
Long-term. Yeah, we don't
no long-term effects.
Have any idea, really, what the long-term
ramifications
might be.
What kind of attitude is that?
You know? There's not been any like trial runs.
How would you view, for example, a product that was for sale in the pharmaceutical market if the FDA was like, we're just assuming this is fine.
We haven't tested it.
We've been using it for a while, and it hasn't caused anything bad so far, but we haven't actually tested
except
it.
Except it has caused bad
things. Except it has caused bad things, but we're all just sort of soldiering on, you know?
Yeah, no, that's a fair
point. I don't
point.
Understand why more people aren't asking whether or not this is good, or just at least seeking some ways to, like, cut back a little bit. Yeah. I mean, we don't know for sure, obviously, if any of this is true, but we also for sure don't know whether this is a good thing, you know?
Right.
There's just no
right.
data on it. It's
right.
very new.
There's no
in the
data.
Case of the
yeah.
internet, it's less than 20 years old. Humans have been around a long time. That's not very
That's
long.
That's not a big
That is not good. That's
sample,
less than one
yeah.
generation.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
bad.
Yeah, and there's, you know, there's people who are, like, drawing attention to it, like Adam
yeah.
Alter, you know, like
yep.
we were talking about before.
Yep. There's more and more people kind of blowing the whistle, like, hey.
Think about sort of the social
this.
Consequences.
Yeah.
So there's another book, Reclaiming Conversation by
okay.
Sherry Turkle, and it's about the ways that technology has interfered with conversation and why that matters and sort of human relationships in general.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was
so,
checking my phone. I wasn't listening to what you were saying.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so ways to limit it or to at least be more like in charge of the technology instead of it being in charge of you.
Yeah. So how do you want to do that section? We can just start with, should we start with the internet? And then go through the other things? Or should we start with, like, the older media and kind of work up to the internet?
Let's start with the older stuff.
Okay,
first.
So one fairly obvious thing is, if you haven't already done so, and most people have, because who has this anymore, is if you still have cable TV, you could consider not having cable TV. I think most people are leaning that way now anyways, because
of, like, streaming and
yeah,
stuff?
Streaming.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people still have it for Fox News and sports.
Yeah.
And if Fox News is that important to you, then please stop listening and leave.
No, we love you guys.
We love everyone. But if it's possible for you, obviously that's huge. You can't control what comes out of the TV, no matter how hard you try. Just some of
yeah,
there.
I mean,
at
the,
any point,
the question of like what of the degree to which news media shapes public opinion is a whole nother can of worms.
Not touching that.
Yeah, well, that's for another episode, I guess.
Right. But that's something that I would say, honestly, you is really kind of a duh.
Mm-hmm.
That should be a given.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have TV. If you're concerned about controlling information in your home, it's
yeah.
basically like having a 24, you know...
Yeah, it is the...
pipeline of information, 24/7 pipeline of information into your home, which is literally just unfettered.
It is absolutely Pandora's box. I mean,
yeah.
There's some good stuff, of course,
sure.
like a little bit,
right?
But it's much easier to just find that, you know, in another way than to
yeah.
allow everything for the sake of that one
right.
one thing you like to watch. But
yeah, so if you still have cable TV for some reason, people do.
Yeah, a lot of people.
A lot
do.
Of people do. I'm surprised, but a lot of people are streaming.
Yeah, that's the new
my,
trend. But.
My biases are coming out. It's like, how do they have TV?
It's
like, calm down.
Yeah, this
plenty
is definitely
people
a
have
biased
it.
Episode.
Yeah.
All of our episodes are biased. So
right.
Whatever.
So, you could consider not having that. Would be a polite way to say
okay.
it.
Okay. Good point. Next one.
Another way, if you have a smartphone.
Which you're probably using to listen to this right now.
Right. Don't have that. You could consider switching to a flip phone if you can find anyone who still has those, a service provider that still offers flip phones.
Yeah, right, right.
Right, that basically means you're going to have to call everybody and not text, so you're going to be a social outcast. You might have to find new friends, too. But, you know, that's the price you pay. Or just not have any.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or if, I mean, best case scenario, do you even need a cell phone at all?
Yeah, that...
Maybe you
I'm
just
very
have a landline.
People who can get by with that, but
right, I have one, so I can't.
Yeah, we can't judge.
I saw this product
Mine's a dumb
online.
Phone, but
this
it's...
is kind of yeah. You have a flip phone,
slider thing,
so you
yeah.
can still text. It's got the like slide out keyboard. Those are kind of an early 2000s thing.
Yeah.
I like those.
Yeah,
I
they
had
don't
one until
really
it broke,
make them anymore.
And then I can't find anybody to replace mine.
Yeah.
Another thing you can do if you really want to. This is a note on phones. I found this product online.
it's not ironic.
If you find that, yeah, exactly. If you find that your family life is suffering because there's too much phone usage, you can buy
like a smartphone cage. Mm. And you basically lock, it's like literally a cage. Cage. It's a cage. It's like a cage. It looks like jail, you know,
jailhouse. You put your phone in jail.
You put your phones in jail and you can set a timer. That's hilarious. And it basically locks them in there for the duration of the time. And if you try to rip the thing off, it'll sound off an alarm.
It shoots you.
No. Yeah, and then when it shoots you.
It doesn't, no. Actually.
It'll set off an alarm. And then when your phones are ready to be released, you know, in some cases a cheesy voice will be like, case dismissed or something what? Like that. Yeah. These are pretty dumb. I'm not kidding. If you type in cell phone lockup.
Okay.
So search that in your browser, you're going to find products that are literally just, not that's guilty. That's interesting. Case dismissed.
I mean, it's hilarious, it's but like, it's probably, you know, useful.
1 hour conversation segments, like, we're going to have a conversation at dinner whether we like it or not.
And the phones are going to be locked up. Phones are going to
be locked up.
Yeah, yeah.
So, that's kind of funny. So then let's move on to the internet.
Okay.
You have some apps. I have some right stuff. Away. So let's just talk about, like, if you're going to have just, like, you're going to have a Wi-Fi, you're going to have Ethernet, you're going to have internet coming into your home. Here's some things you can do to put some limits on that. Yeah, go ahead.
To keep control of it.
Yep.
Well, of course, the first thing that a person could do, and you actually know more about this than I do, is put a timer on your Wi-Fi so that it's not available all the time.
Yeah,
you can have dead zones, like maybe during the night. I don't know what you did.
We did that for a while. We just bought a timer like you would buy for like Christmas lights, you know.
So they can
a certain
time,
turn off a certain time. Put it on our router, mm-hmm. So that a Wi-Fi would turn off, within those time periods. And I think we it varied, but we experimented with different times. So we would shut it off at 5:30 or so, that like, you know, when the work day is done, we just socialize from that point on. And that was actually pretty nice. You found like, hey, we're talking.
Right.
And then it would kick on at like 8 o'clock in the morning. So sort of 8 to 5:30, you know, kind of workday hours.
Gives you
you have internet. You can use it during the day if you need it. But then it shuts off at night so you can actually socialize. So that was actually pretty useful.
Yeah. Which, and people, I think, use the internet probably the most now in the evenings. Like that's when you're most get, you know, sucked into like a YouTube trail, you know.
Yep. Go down the hole of whatever.
Yeah, I think, and people use it later and later, you know, the traffic.
Yeah, or like just going. Fall asleep in their bed with their smartphone.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
The problem with that was that it was all too easy to just unplug it from that and stick it in the outlet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that was an easy bypass. You have to wait 30 seconds for your router to reset. It's a long time, let me tell you. Oh, you gotta watch your Netflix.
That's intense. So that's, you know, would be one way. Then if you also, you know, you want to keep track maybe of, just get a better sense for how you're using your technology, your devices.
That would be scary.
Yeah. So this is the little interactive portion of the podcast.
Yeah.
For those of you who have iPhones, and I haven't tested this because I don't have one, but apparently you can go into settings and then swipe down and tap battery, and then tap the clock icon to the right of last 24 hours and last 7 days. And when you tap that clock, it'll show you the amount of time in hours and minutes that each app was used in the last 7 days or the last 24 hours.
Yeah.
It'll give you the actual amount of time on that app. So that's
some cases,
more than just the internet, but it would show you.
I'm sure
it would
be a wake-up call, like, ah!
Yeah.
I'm using how much time on X app?
Right, right. I mean, like we said earlier, most people spend, I think, a lot more time on average than they realize on their devices. And then, okay, if your main concern maybe for the internet is just not wanting inappropriate content into your home, pornography or whatever, especially, you know, for children, there's a program called Net Nanny,
I've heard of that.
Which can be configured to block that kind of content.
Can you kind of set it up so that it won't, like, block innocent articles?
Presumably,
The problem, I think, I've heard the problem with some of these is, like,
it just blocks everything.
It blocks everything. It's like, no, it's just, you know, I was buying nude makeup or whatever, you know, the color or something. It's like, oh, you can't buy that, sorry.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure there's kind of levels you can put it at. Then there's another app that will do two things. It's a paid app. This is called Rescue Time.
Okay.
But it does two things. It allows you to track how long you spend on different websites and certain apps. And then it also allows you to then block websites from yourself.
Interesting.
You have to make an account, and that one is paid. But then there's a free one, I believe it's free, Time Tracker, which does a similar thing. It's just an extension for Chrome.
Okay.
There's several like this. It's an extension for Chrome, and it'll just keep track of how much time you spend on different websites.
Can you use it to block things too? Do you know?
I don't think this one allows you to block. Okay. But it allows you to see how much time you're spending on different things. And then there are, you can block time wasting sites just through your computer system files. It's a little bit of a complicated process, so I'm not going to explain it here, but...
Oh, I've heard of doing that, yeah.
You can, yeah, basically go in and block different IP addresses.
Sure.
A simpler way to do it, you can, again, use different plugins for browsers like
right.
LeechBlock, Chrome Nanny, Self Control, and Strict Workflow. These
okay.
are different ones. And some of them, like, will even say you're at work and you want to stay focused or something, it'll block a given website for a certain amount of time, and then it'll give you like a 5-minute window.
Like, ooh, you can have a
you know,
break.
Like, okay, yeah, and then you can go check the
yeah.
news.
Yep.
And then it blocks it again for another period of time.
That's interesting.
So, yeah, so LeechBlock, Chrome Nanny, Self Control, Strict Workflow, they're each kind of for different browsers, but yeah, so those were some of the apps that I found when I was looking into this, which can give you a little bit more control at any rate. Of course, there's ad blockers as well. Those
yeah.
are somewhat controversial because people feel like, I don't know, it hurts other people's livelihoods or something. We will not comment on that. But
yeah.
you can use ad blockers to
sure.
to cut out a huge amount of material as
yeah.
well. You know, obviously,
yep.
there's ads everywhere. So, okay.
Okay, yeah. Another kind of, talking about the internet, a few other things you can do that are just sort of more user-dictated. So, like, there's a lifestyle choice.
Yeah.
One thing would be, for a lot of people, it's fairly drastic, is just don't have social media accounts. Or start to limit what social media accounts you have.
Sure.
You know, if you're on
sure.
Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, and Facebook, knock
yeah.
one of those out. Then
yeah,
knock
yeah.
another one out, then knock another one out, then knock another one out. No one can steal your information and use it to their advantage if you don't give it to them. I've never been on social media.
And I suppose...
I was surprised by, for example, you know, starting a new job, they're surprised by how little information they can find out about me.
Really?
Because
really?
When you go to get a job, the first thing they do is look at your social
yeah.
media. They try to find out as much as they can about you.
Yeah.
I always come in a new job, this is like a blank slate, they don't know anything about me.
Mm-hmm.
They're often a little creeped out. They're like, what are you hiding? It's
yeah.
like, nothing, I just don't want you
just
to have all my information.
I have social media.
Yeah.
You know, and I suppose... You know, the alternative then for those people to stay in touch, because a lot of people use it, you know, to stay
in touch.
Yeah,
you stay in touch.
By phone, I suppose. And
phone, email, I mean,
simpler.
Nothing against email.
Methods, but. But it does limit, you know, maybe that.
I even write letters sometimes to, like, grandparents, you know.
Yeah.
Just sit down and write a letter.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, it can be done. You can pick up the phone and call people. I know it's scary.
Yeah.
And
we could spend a lot more time
we could spend
on
a lot
social
time
media.
On that.
I mean,
yeah.
there's. I'm pretty sure it's been shown that social media just increases people's anxiety and
yeah.
decreases your
yeah.
satisfaction with
I
your
have
life.
Never found that my quality of life has gone down not having it. I mean, maybe I'm
yeah,
missing.
I've never really
I've
had
never
it
used it, so maybe I'm missing something. I don't know
maybe.
For sure.
And it's funny, I was trying to decide if we needed to have, like, any social media for the podcast, but... you know, people see, like, next week we'll have social media now, but...
Right.
No, not necessarily. Yeah, so that's a good one. Not having social media would certainly limit your
another thing along with
technology.
That would be to just try to make more discerning choices in the media you do consume. I think we should clarify at this point that obviously we don't think the internet is all bad.
Right, yeah. I mean, look at what we're doing right now.
Look at what we're doing right now. I mean, we obviously think this is a decent enough idea or we wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
And there are definitely, you know, good things you can get through it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's good
mm-hmm.
media out there. But maybe we try to be more discerning about the choices you make, you know, what kinds of things you're reading, listening to, watching, that kind of thing. So maybe listen to, you know, less/better music.
Yeah.
Less the stuff in the top 40 and maybe do a little more digging. Not saying you just have to sit around and listen to, like, you know, Bach preludes and like, oh, great, put on your powdered wig and, you know, no more fun for you. You must enjoy Bach, you know. Like, we don't have the attention, most people don't have the attention span. If I was like, you have to listen to Bach, they'd be like, oh my gosh, can I just die? You know, we're not saying that, but maybe, like, do some digging, try to find some music that's a little bit more
yeah.
substantive than just, like, you know.
And, yeah, if it's something, you know, if you're concerned about your technology usage, just finding the your own weak points. Like, I know for
yeah.
me, I go on YouTube and just 2 hours later, I realized I've just been watching dumb, like, cat, you know,
like cute cat
the world's biggest domino display, which is like, it's cool, but is it really improving my life? And I've if I were to add up the amount of time I've wasted on YouTube, it would have, be like
another degree. It'd
be awful, yeah.
Yeah, you know, there are all kinds
of great... motion explosion of a glass sphere, you know, things like that. It's like, I don't need...
This guy heats up a knife and then cuts stuff with it.
What happens next will amaze you.
Blow your mind.
Yeah, it's fun, but it's not adding to my life. It's so fun,
and I wouldn't really be where I am without those hot knife videos.
Yeah.
But there's all kinds of good content in terms of film, mm-hmm. even some good content on YouTube.
Yeah, yeah.
Make an effort to find it and watch it, you know. And
right.
There's still good stuff being written in terms of media, you know, whether it's blogs or books or what have you. You know, just make an effort to be discerning that way. Should we talk about the most extreme you could get?
Okay, yeah, go for it.
So, if you want to be very extreme, you buy a cabin in the woods, and no, you don't have to be that extreme. We're not advocating decamping to a weird commune, although we are.
Yeah, we did it.
We do reside in one ourselves, but we don't want you here because it's a closed commune.
Private. No.
Yeah, no.
We don't have any internet here.
Well, that is the next step. The next logical step is honestly. Don't have the internet.
You have experience with that.
I have experience with that. I do not. Because we have made the choice to not have internet in our home.
Mm-hmm,
we still have devices. We have smartphones.
But you can't use laptops, them to access the internet. Blah, blah,
blah. We can't use them to access the internet if you're at home. We can't really even use them to access phone because we don't have very good signal where we live. but we have made the choice to not have internet in our home. And that's been the case for about 3-4 months now.
And what would you say is your feeling about it now? I mean,
honestly, without those videos of guys cutting through frozen stuff with a hot knife, I have a hard time getting up in the morning now.
Nothing left to live for.
Nothing to live for. You know, my children, I just look at them and I feel listless because it's like I could be watching a video. I could
be watching.
Of a guy cutting through something frozen with a sharp hot knife.
Yeah, or videos of funny animals.
You know. No. I have found the quality of life has improved.
Okay, dramatically. Good, yeah.
We both noticed the positives first. We've both noticed, both me and my wife, right away that our attention spans increased.
Yeah, yeah.
Greatly. We also noticed that there's way more time in the day than you thought there was.
Yeah.
Jeepers.
Yeah.
So we've both been reading nonstop since this happened for like 3 or 4 months.
Uh-huh.
In 3 or 4 months, we've probably each read like 4 or 5 books. And we live busy lives. Yeah. You know, we have kids. You got kids. I work. My wife cares for those people, the kids. Yeah. So we're busy, you know, it's not like we don't have anything to do, but like just in the time we didn't know we had, all of a sudden we have the attention span and the ability to start reading and actually make, you know, more informed choices about what we read, you know, just sit down and like must have information, must have stimulation and pull up
some random website.
Yeah, so we're actually reading, you know, kind of more curated books, stuff that, you know, appeals to our interests or we feel like would help develop. I found it's easier to focus on my family. You know, I have kids and
you can
pay more attention to them and you're less impatient because when we had the internet you'd get home from work and you'd be like, oh gosh, I'm so glad that I got home from work so I can sit down and like look at the computer some more.
Yeah.
And then you'd be annoyed at your kid if you're like, why are you interrupting my special selfish computer time.
Right.
I've been staring at a computer all day. I deserve a little more time to sit here and, like, look at the news or something, you know? And it's like, it didn't make any sense.
Yeah. But you get that, you get, you know, addicted. It becomes a habit.
You get addicted.
Where I, you know, totally.
But
totally
all of this stuff, you know, reading, we're more focused on family, starting to, like, develop hobbies again, spending more time outside.
Yeah.
Just better handle on where we're going, you know, better sense of what we want to do with ourselves. We're more focused, I would say.
So that's, you know, first.
Obviously, there are some hardships to it, you know, especially on my wife who's home more.
it's hard for her to not be able to, like, look stuff up.
Sure.
Or do research or stuff like that for, you know, trying to pursue hobbies and what have you, or trying to pursue goals in our family. So that's a, you know, big thing. I mean, if you listen to the podcast, you know, previous episodes even, and I'm sure as we continue, you'll notice that, like, Walker has done a lot more research than me. You'll cite things, and you can do that with the internet. And that's a good use of it. You know, like, you can go find, you can quickly find some actual data on what it is we're talking about. You can pull up, like, here's a study. I have what I've read in the past, but it's just my memory of what I've read in the past. I can't pull it up and cite it because I don't have an eidetic memory.
Yeah.
You know, if I did, I'd be like, oh, on page, you know, 75 of this book published by such and such, I can, you know, but I don't have an eidetic memory.
Better without the internet.
It probably is. But I mean, for a certain type of research, the internet is very useful. I mean,
yeah,
it's like, pull something up, like, oh,
and
quick,
you know, there are always coffee shops for that.
Yeah, exactly. Really gotta... Yep. But like, finding the time to get there is not as easy, and so I mean, it is definitely there are definitely downsides to it. But I would say, by and large, it's been overwhelmingly positive. So
very cool.
Yeah, something to think about for all of you who, you know,
are interested in this kind of thing. Yeah,
about this kind of thing.
So, but of course, the number one thing that you should do to limit your technology use is
stop listening
to this podcast right now. Don't ever listen to it again. I know it's addictive, and so for your own good, you're just gonna have to stop. And you know,
and
to
I
help
think
you
as a
out,
public service,
we're
just gonna stop.
So that's the end of this episode. Thank you very much for listening, and have a lovely
bye.